Well, today we begin a journey. Today the journey we begin is one of relationship. Now, over the next several weeks, we will be journeying with Jesus. There will be many places. There will be, oh, so many people. There will be many stories. And there will be many learnings. We will consider the relationship that Jesus had with the world. The relationship Jesus had with those in need. The relationship Jesus had with those in power. And we will consider the relationship that Jesus invites each and every one of us into. In fact, as we journey along, we will hear Jesus ask us directly, "Who do you say that I am?" This question is one that we all must answer. It's a question we must answer on our own journeys. And I'll tell you, our answers to that question certainly change and grow throughout life. There are times we can hear Jesus ask, "Who do you say I am?" And we can respond with a strong certainty. There are times we can respond only with honest doubt. But the important thing is that we are considering our response, spending time considering our relationship. This is why we focus on the journey of relationship. Because this journey is not about a destination, for there's no one point when we get to say we're done. Oh, good, I've got the Jesus thing figured out. Let's call it a day. I've not found that yet. Nobody that spent time with Jesus ever found that. For just as Jesus walked with his disciples then, Jesus walks with us as disciples now. And just as those who follow Jesus were often surprised and confused at pretty much everything Jesus had to say or do, Jesus will have some surprises in store for us as well. Now, to guide us on this journey in the weeks to come, we will be following the movements and stories of Jesus as told in the Gospel of Mark. The Gospel of Mark is one of the four accounts of Jesus' life included in our Bible. Now, mind you, there were others, but these are the four that made it in: Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Interestingly enough, Mark was written first, even though it's not first in order in our Bible. It was most likely written around the year 60, some 30 years or so after Jesus' death and resurrection. Oh, spoiler alert, sorry, death, resurrection, that happens later. It was around that time, around that year 60, when those who knew Jesus firsthand realized if they wanted the stories to survive them, they better write them down. And so many people did. And every single account of the life of Jesus carries with it a different perspective and a different purpose. The Gospel of Mark was written for people who had little background with the Jewish tradition and might be hearing the story of Jesus for the very first time. The author of Mark drew upon the different sayings and stories and wisdom that people remembered from the life of Jesus. I'll tell you, of the different Gospels, the Gospel of Mark is the shortest of all of the accounts of Jesus' life. It's actually got about half as many chapters as some others, but the same story. And so what we're going to do during Lent, this season of preparing for Easter, is each week we're going to read two chapters at a time. And I'm asking you to read along with me. This week we're going to look at Mark 1 and 2. Next week I want you to read Mark 3 and 4. Listen, I promise this is manageable. You have read menus that are longer than two chapters of Mark. Seriously, what's up with Cheesecake Factory? It's like Tolstoy wrote their menu. But there's very little. I mean, it's a powerful story, but we'll use the phrase brief and heartfelt. That's one of the reasons I like the Gospel of Mark. It tells you the story and gets out of the way. And so we're going to do this together. The reason I mention this is I believe that reading two chapters of Mark a week is a doable commitment if you're willing to make it. So I hope that you'll read two chapters with me each week. I think this will offer us something very, very helpful as we move forward on the journey together. You know, I've heard someone joke that, "Oh, sure, I believe all the things people tell me that the Bible tells me." We can get some distance between us and those scriptures. Suddenly people are telling us what's in there versus us seeing it ourselves. There's something about that that makes me a little uncomfortable. And so I hope that you will take a look for yourself. Maybe you go home, you find your own Bible, you open it up to the Gospel of Mark, and you read chapters 3 and 4. Maybe you just go to Google and you type Mark chapter 3. It'll pop up. It's right there. Or if you would benefit, I have a few extra copies. I talked to one of my friends at the bookstore, and these are some copies of the Gospel of Mark. If you want one, they're right here. You come grab one. There are going to be things as we read Mark together that you're going to love. There are going to be things as we read Mark together that are going to confuse you. There are going to be things that as we read Mark together, you're going to go, well, we better talk about that. And I tell you, we're going to. This is the joy that we get to share this journey together, reading the story, talking, looking, questioning, figuring things out. We're going to talk about it here. As the Gospel of Mark begins, the scene is set by a prophet known as John the Baptist, wandering through the wilderness, telling God's story. It's this very baptizer who will stand with Jesus in the waters of the River Jordan, plunge him underneath as the Spirit of God descends, speaking that this is my beloved. After that baptism, Jesus goes and spends 40 days in the wilderness preparing for his ministry. This is actually where we get the whole 40 days of Lent thing. 40 days not including Sundays, started on Wednesday. And it's that 40 days that we're using to prepare us for Easter. Now Jesus spends these days in the wilderness and grows and learns. And when he returns from his time away, one of the first things Jesus does is invite people to join him. Because Jesus believes in relationship. Jesus calls disciples by name and invites them to join him. I've always loved this moment, especially as one who believes that Jesus calls each of us. Hear these words from Mark. As Jesus passed along the Galilean Sea, he saw two brothers, Simon and Andrew, throwing their fishing nets into the sea, for they were fishermen. "Come, follow me," he said, "and I will show you how to fish for people." Right away they left their nets and they followed him. You see, when Jesus invited these guys, they didn't know what was to come. They didn't know who he would be. They only had an invitation. I've always appreciated the simplicity of this, the honesty of this. I find it relatable because I think this can be our story too. To hear the invitation to enter into relationship with Jesus, it's fair to acknowledge we may not know all that that's going to mean. We don't know all that that's going to change. We don't know how it might completely affect every part of our life. But Jesus' calling is our story too, because it's where our journey of relationship begins, with an invitation. But hear how powerfully direct and simple this invitation is. I mean, when you think about who Jesus asks, I mean, Jesus asks regular, real people. As we walk through and hear the different names that Jesus calls and their different occupations, you get some fishermen, a couple salespeople, a tax collector. I mean, just regular folk. These are not people of status. These are not people who have special skills or some sort of resume that sets them apart from others. And as we will come to know them, every single one of these people Jesus invites to join him is flawed and imperfect. Just like the people Jesus is going to spend his time with. Just like the people Jesus is going to share meals with. Just like the people Jesus wants to journey through life with. Just like the people we are. Jesus wants to be with and journey with real people. This is important for us to know. Important for us to know that there is no reason to pretend that we're people of status, though many of us do have much status compared to others in the world. There's no reason to pretend that we have some sort of special resume that sets us apart from other people, some sort of special knowledge that means we'll understand what Jesus is saying. No reason to pretend that we are anything other than flawed and imperfect people. We get to be us. That's who Jesus wants to be with. Us. All of us, meaning everyone, and all of us, meaning our entire being. Jesus seeks relationship with all of us. We're the kind of folks that Jesus invites. Now, it's also worth remembering how Jesus invites these folks. Jesus invites real people as a real person. I mean, here Jesus is recruiting his team, going out there asking people, cold calls, to give up everything and follow him. This is the time for an impressive miracle, if there ever was one. This is the time for some divine action, or at least a cool party trick to get people's attention. Come and follow me, poof. But that's not how Jesus does it. Did you hear it in the story? He wants those who follow him to simply be who they are, and so he commits to doing the same. No walking on water. No turning water into wine. No beams of light. No burning bushes. Just a question. An invitation. It's actually quite bold. He doesn't even pull out the I'm the Son of God card, right? I mean, that, if you're looking to gather a crowd, that one might be a nice angle. Come follow me. I am the Son of God. Things are going to be all right. That would have been an angle. But instead, he goes with, follow me. I'll teach you how to fish for people. Yeah, that plays really well. But he goes with this honest, real approach because that's who Jesus wants to be. He doesn't want some list of expectations out in front of him. You know, if you walk up and introduce yourself as, hi, I'm God incarnate, the light of the world, savior of all, God's perfect offering of love. Come and follow me. That's a lot of expectations to put out there in the world. And Jesus wants people to know him, not to know a reputation. Jesus wants people to know him, not some set of expectations. Jesus wants a real relationship. This is something we see Jesus do all the time in the beginning of the gospel. He cares greatly and tends intentionally to who people think he is. As he goes and heals people, he tells them all not to say anything to anyone. Yeah, that's going to work, Jesus. Hear these words from Mark again. Jesus reached out his hand and touched the man and said, you shall be clean. Instantly the skin disease left him and the man was clean. Sternly, Jesus sent him away saying, don't say anything to anyone. Jesus was trying to control the expectations. Or when those who knew more about him and would proclaim more about them than he wanted the world to know, he would silence them. There are all of these little examples of Jesus trying to manage expectations because expectations can ruin relationships. Now that statement is true on a lot of levels, but in this case, I want to remind you of what we saw when Jesus called the disciples. Jesus wants people to know him and not just buy into some sort of hype. And there is going to be a lot of hype to come in the story we'll see unfold. This is a culture that's been waiting expectantly. Did you hear the words we sang? Come thou long expected Jesus, born to set thy people free. From our fears and sins release us. Let us find our rest in thee. Israel's strength and consolation, hope of all the earth thou art. Dear desire of every nation, joy of every longing heart. No pressure, dude. But this is what Jesus was walking into. People who were looking and longing and expecting the Messiah to be just that. But I tell you, a Messiah is not who you have a personal relationship with. Jesus wanted them to have a relationship with him, not with some idea. You know, it's amazing how quickly the crowds built. Even in the very first chapter of Mark, the crowds start to get huge. The gospel tells us this. Early in the morning, well before sunrise, Jesus rose and went to a place where he could be alone in prayer. But the disciples tracked him down. And when they found him, they said to Jesus, everyone is looking for you. And Jesus replied, let's head in the other direction. I love that. It's, hey, Jesus, there's a huge crowd. Okay, let's go that way then. There are folks who are starting to show up just because others are showing up. Oh, there's a crowd. Let's go see what's happening. Suddenly people are all wanting to be there because people are all wanting to be there. They don't even know or care what's really happening sometimes. And that's not the relationship Jesus was looking for. Jesus is looking for authentic relationship with people who want to get to know him and who are willing to share who they are. So after that line of, let's go the other direction, Jesus says to the places and towns that haven't heard yet, let us go there. He wants to find a new place where folks might actually listen to what he is saying instead of just listening to what people are saying about him. And Jesus had some powerful things to say, all of which are many variations on a single theme. Hear Jesus' first sermon as he shared it in the Gospel of Mark. Now is the time. Here comes God's kingdom. Change your hearts and lives and trust this good news. All with exclamation points, I might mind you. That's my kind of sermon. Now is the time. Here comes God's kingdom. Change your hearts and lives and trust this good news. That message still rings true today. And I especially love that last line. Trust this good news. Because that's something that takes a relationship. Trust. It's something that Jesus is willing to earn. It's something Jesus is willing to build with us as we journey together. So let's see if we can get past the last 2,000 years of hype. Let's see if we can avoid the even more generations of expectations that might be sitting there before us. In this Lenten season, let's see if we can't spend some time getting to know Jesus for ourselves. Because we're the only ones who can answer the question, who do you say I am? Amen.